Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your owl post is freshly delivered, and we're so excited to be back in Book 2, The Chamber of Secrets.
Ooh. I like that this one doesn't have two names.
Oh, like the Philosopher's Stone?
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited that we're going to dive into a brand new Harry Potter book. I can't believe that we got through the first one already. It's gone by so quickly. We just really want to thank you for being with us this long. It's been a lot of fun to get to talk to new people about Harry Potter. And so, help us out, you know, share the show on Facebook or Twitter when we post it, or if you have the opportunity to, you can really help people find the show by reviewing us in iTunes and Apple Podcasts there. The way all of that works, it really does help people find us. And so go over there, give us a star rating and review, and we will definitely thank you on the show. We have for everybody who's given us a review so far, and thank you for everybody who's already done that. That's great. If you'd like to talk to us some more about Harry Potter, which we love, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. We post all the shows there, and you can find us, all the shows that happen on the Nerd Party, but especially, obviously, we're talking about Owl Post, and so comment, tell us what you think about the different episodes. You can also find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, and so those are all good ways to contact us. And last but not least, you can go to the website at thenerdparty.com, and there's a contact section. So it's thenerdparty.com/contact. You can choose Owl Post, and you can send Drea and I a message about whatever you're thinking about Harry Potter. So, interesting chapter, Drea, the worst birthday. I do have to say, pretty rotten birthday for Harry this year.
Yeah. I don't know if I can say it's the worst, though. I mean, we don't know his previous 11 mm-hmm. birthdays, so I don't know that it's actually the worst.
That
but.
Is true, although I was thinking about a birthday in which that evening, your whole goal is to pretend like you don't exist. It's a pretty bad birthday,
yeah, but that,
right?
I don't know. I feel like forcing him to socialize with them would have been worse.
That's true. But also on top of that, you know, he's not hearing from anybody friend-wise from Hogwarts. And maybe that's worse because he thought he had friends and now he feels like he doesn't. So
okay, yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah. Maybe that's what she's going for. And I think she does a pretty good job of that in the chapter. Now, this is an interesting chapter. It is one in which there is a lot of rehash of what's happened in the last book and kind of reorienting people to the world, which makes sense. You know, we're diving back into the world and it's, you know, been a year since kids had read the first Harry Potter book. And it's a little different now when we just get to binge read them. And so I love, though, that this starts with Harry making a funny joke at the breakfast table and the Dursleys not taking it well.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Harry, you got my comedic vote.
Yes, because Dudley is asking him to pass the frying pan, even though his large bottom is drooping over either side of the kitchen chair. And Harry says, "You forgot the magic word." And they just like flip it out. Yeah. It's bad. And mainly it sounds like the fact that Harry has probably gotten in trouble with this before throughout the summer already, that, you know, threatening magic or even talking about magic. And it's funny because, you know, we talked about in the first book how the Dursleys, they don't like the idea that they have to face what they don't want to believe in. And Harry now is living proof in their kitchen, in their living room, in their house, 24/7 over the summer. That's not what they want at all.
It's true. It's true. And they can't pretend like it's not a thing anymore. So now they just have to pretend like Harry doesn't exist as a thing anymore.
Which is really mean. I mean, you know, when you think about it, like pretending somebody doesn't exist or trying to pretend like they don't exist, that's got to be seriously psychologically damaging as a person, you know?
It's always surprising how fairly normal he turned out to. As normal as a wizard can be.
But, well, that, you know, yeah, absolutely.
Emotionally stable.
Well, and that is something that I think is wonderful about the series is that as he grows up, there does become a bit more emotional instability. Like there is that breaking point and we do get that. And it's in book five. It's kind of like as if everything that's ever been bad in his life finally comes to explosive fruition and he just can't take it anymore. And that's really his breakdown book. And I love that she doesn't pass over that later on in the series. Like she doesn't discount awful life that Harry has had. And so I think that's one of the interesting things here. Yes, this chapter doesn't have a ton to it, but it is continuing to build the mistreatment of Harry Potter and the frustration for him. And I think it also is doing that thing where it kind of sets him apart of why he wouldn't want to be like this, because he's experienced too much of it. And like it seems as his personality has become one that wants to do everything to fight against this kind of thing.
Yeah. But even his like emotional, I don't know, awakening moments later on and his, you know, sort of breaking down and coming back. Someone who endures this much trauma and this much neglect, this is straight up neglect at this point. Like this whole thing is just, where is CPS? Like, seriously. But it can have such, I mean, that like this is one of those things that people do research their entire life on to prove this is where serial killers come from and sociopaths and things like that, you know? And it's just amazing to me that even when you get to the point where they're literally trying to ignore who he is, that they're like, he still somehow manages to come out in that kindness that we talked about a lot in the beginning of the first book. Like that's still his mantra for just existing, even when he thinks all his friends have abandoned him, even when he thinks, you know, maybe he is just weird and strange all over again after spending a summer home, which at this point we still don't really understand why he did that. And we don't really understand until like the last book why he did that. But it's just one of those where the first couple chapters of all of the Harry Potter books, whenever they involve the Dursleys, always just make me like astonished at how he turns out in the long run. And this was no exception to that rule.
It's interesting because in some ways it makes me understand why Harry says in the first book, you know, I will never turn to the dark side. You know, when him and Ron and Hermione are having that conversation and how he would never join the evil side, like that he's so familiar with its impact already just from the evilness of the Dursleys and the way they treat him, that it's done the opposite of turn him into a bitter, angry person. It's done that other thing that can happen to people, which is turning him into something who wants that to be the absolute opposite of that. And
he wants better than what
right.
he said.
And he, what's interesting is there is this thing in him which he instinctively knows that people shouldn't be treated like this. And that's a really interesting thing. And it's a whole discussion, I guess, you could have about the idea of kind of instinctively knowing what right and wrong are inside. And Harry has that, you know, because you see that throughout the series. Harry has this instinctual understanding of what the right way to treat people is and what the wrong way to treat people is. And we saw that in the first book with the way that he treated somebody like Neville, the way he and Ron and Hermione were able to feel for somebody like Quirrell when they thought that he was being, you know, bullied by Snape, all of those kind of things, like you see it coming out of him. And it really is this wonderful area of that Harry is able to be one of those people who takes adversity and uses it to his full advantage to become a better person instead of just using it as an opportunity to complain about, oh, my life sucked, so I can't be good. You know, like he never takes that excuse. And so it almost reminds me too of how Star Trek V, where Kirk says, I need my pain. My pain makes me who I am. You know, my experiences form who I am. And Harry is the same way. Like, he needs all of that because it informs who he is and why he isn't another type of person. I think that's really interesting. And wow, I didn't know we were going to get this deep on this chapter.
We were like, hey guys, this is going to be super short and sweet and to the point. Yeah, no. And arguably all the decisions he makes have a central theme to them and kind of are comforting to him based on where he comes from, and that he always makes the hard choice. Like, he never takes the easy way out. Being kind to someone who's been absolutely horrible to you is the harder choice than to just sink to their level and be a total jerk back. You know, he could totally feel like the world owes him, but he doesn't. But he always makes the harder choice in the situation is always what he goes on. And I think it's because he's always struggled with things being difficult and he likes the challenge of it. And so he continues, and in this case, being the better person and being the kinder person and making the decision
and
that is more self-sacrificial is harder, is a lot harder. There's a lot of people, I mean, I want to say that there are times where even I'm sure Matt and I don't make the harder choice, even though it's probably the right choice.
There's so a little more Voldemort in me than I would like to admit.
But I think it's just interesting that and sometimes I wonder, especially at this age, if he even really truly understands like right and wrong, or if he just understands the challenge and the hard and what he doesn't want to do. And so he does the opposite, and maybe not understanding it's like right versus wrong. He just does the opposite of what he's experienced and then keeps making those hard decisions because he's starting to learn and understand they are the right ones to make.
See, that is such a great way of putting it. This whole idea of Harry Potter being a person who doesn't take the easy way out. I love that. And it's actually something that Dumbledore is going to say to him at the end of this book. So it's so cool that we're actually talking about the idea of choices and how they define who we are, the choices we make. And Harry's decisions throughout the first book have already defined him. And I think the other thing that coming off the last book and into this one, Harry instinctively is somebody who is living out a life of loving others by putting others above himself, the same way his parents did. Especially, I think something clicks in him by the end of the book when he learns that it was, you know, he's spent the early part of the book realizing and learning that his parents actually died to protect him from something. And he never seems to really take that for granted until maybe later on when he's being a little bit too daring and not taking care of the gift that his parents have given him in some ways, being a good steward of his own life in some ways, because he's being
very cavalier with his life and with his choices because he feels like he's
absolutely gone up in the woods. Yeah. And I think that that's I really love that, and I really think that that's a message. This whole idea of what we're talking about is such a countercultural message today, of just sucking it up and like being a good person anyway, doing what's right even when it's hard, you know. And awful things happen to us all, right? And I'm not saying that we should condone awful things happening to people, but bad things do happen to all of us. And it's what we do, as we talked about before, with those bad things that really define us. And Harry is one of those people. And looking at this chapter where he spends this whole summer where he says, and I quote, "But now the school year was over and he was back with the Dursleys for the summer, back to being treated like a dog that had rolled in something smelly." Like, that's how he feels here at the Dursleys. And you can tell, like, why we talked about this is the worst birthday ever, because he thought he had made all these new friends and he's not heard from any of them. And in fact, Dudley makes a point to, after Harry gets in trouble later on in this chapter, and is doing a bunch of housework, to basically rib him about, hey, how come you haven't heard from any of your freaky friends? Where are all your birthday presents and everything? And part of the reason is because, well, Uncle Vernon locked up Hedwig in her cage and won't let him out, which is probably not a good idea, because I feel like owls get probably really screechy when they're just in a cage 24/7.
I think I get screechy when I'm just in a cage for 24/7.
You've been in a cage for 24/7? We need to have a talk.
Well, I mean, cubicle, I cage, take your pick.
Absolutely. Another kind of scary thing that's happening to Harry is that he's having a lot of dreams, and he's waking up in that cold sweat of remembering Voldemort, his crazy face, his mad eyes. Like, and it's another building block to see the impact that this person is having on Harry's life, and he's not even around. You know, and they've only met for, what, 10 minutes in the last book? But, like, this ever-living presence of absolute evil in his life, haunting his dreams. And it's just, like, it is kind of enough to make you wonder, how does this kid not go crazy?
I was just thinking that. I don't know how he doesn't lose his mind. And not in a, oh, he's emotionally unstable, but in an actual, I'm like the master in Doctor Who hearing the drums for all eternity. Like, I don't know how he just doesn't lose his mind.
And I really don't know what it is. You know, I would love to have a conversation with J.K. Rowling about the psychology of Harry. And we know that Rowling did not have the easiest life herself. And I think a lot of herself is kind of poured into Harry and the struggles that she had, you know, and I think that that's why, again, in book 5, Harry kind of faces a bit of depression and sadness and all of these things. You know, I love the realness of Harry, and I think this is why so many people relate to him, because so many people have been treated badly in their life at one point or another, and we can relate to that. And I think what's amazing about it is that Harry is such a great role model, the way he handles it for the most part.
I would like to talk to a psychologist about Harry Potter. I'd like to get an actual professional, like, psychological analysis of Harry Potter and if he should have gone insane or I mean, they do studies all the time weighing out your, when they talk about sort of suicidal analysis too, like, what are the good things in your life and the good people in your life versus the bad things. So, like, you could have a ton of bad things, but if you also have enough Ron and Hermione and Dumbledores in your life, like, you can come through it fine. And you're, you know, they can do, like, risk assessments. I'm trying to remember what the actual term is. Oh, like an actuarial review of whether you are suicidal or not based on, we're going deep here, guys. Sorry. Based on, like, weighing the positive and the negative factors in your life to determine how likely the outcome is. So it would also be interesting to see, like, let's weigh some of these things versus against each other. And I feel like his life at Hogwarts, I feel like if he didn't have the life at Hogwarts, that he would not stand a chance of becoming even 1 ounce of the person that he becomes, not just from a savior and hero standpoint, but just from a sane, kind, mm-hmm. you know, able to empathize and sympathize with people,
right.
Human being.
Somebody who can actually walk upright, you know.
Not
exactly.
Cry in their bed all day. Yeah.
Being a weepy tears all the time. I was wondering, and maybe this has something to do with it. You know, Harry's first experience with utter joy is at 11, going to Hogwarts, flying on a broom for the first time. He has all those experiences. And it seems to me, in some ways, that it's that switch in his life to having a part that is really, really, utterly good. You know, because think about this, too. As kids, there's so much we don't remember about being kids in the first place. You know, I'm hard-pressed to remember memories before I'm five, you know? So the fact that he has the opportunity to, he's had some bad years, obviously, where he's really started to remember things, but that at 11, he starts to make some incredibly good memories, and all of those good things begin to have a wonderful effect on him. And I wonder if that has something to do with it. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm sure it has something to do with it. But I mean, usually the things you remember from your childhood are the most traumatic. They're usually the ones that are horrible. So people will talk about, they'll remember being, you know, molested or, you know, or even just something like my first memory I can come up with was the death of a family member. And I was 3.5, 4, something like that. But that one I vividly remember. Mm-hmm. I remember that better than what I had for lunch yesterday. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the sort of traumatic thing. So you could argue that all of it's traumatic to him. So he's none of it's going to stand out. And that could be part of it. I definitely think, though, that coming back to Hogwarts and having that introduced in his life at the time it was, and learning that he's not crazy, he's not alone, he's not, you know, hated and despised by everyone. He didn't go into Hogwarts as like a nobody, know-it-all loner who no one wanted to talk to, right? So I think some of these things had a significant impact on how successful he's ever going to be. But it's still really fascinating if you think about it from that perspective, like how he beat the odds, mm-hmm. like on every yeah. level of Harry Potter beats the odds. So it's really just an interesting thought project.
Well, and
I'm sure we've got people out there who are like screaming in their chairs, like you're all
could,
wrong.
Well, yeah, we could be. And you can definitely tweet us at Join Nerd Party, or you can catch up with us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty and comment on the show. One of the things I was also thinking about, so the whole idea of magic, right? And we learned that Harry has had things happen to him that he cannot explain. And I'm wondering if those things which have happened to him that he cannot explain also gave him a sense of joy he couldn't explain that helps fortify him in some ways, because when really super awful things happen to him that he hated, magic, the childhood magic that he can't control, gave him an opportunity to change it, you know, to make something different happen, you know, in many of the ways in which I think we all have wish fulfillment. We wish that we could just wish away our feeling. I'm just quoting Anakin Skywalker. But we wish we could wish away that bad
Padme
stuff.
Hang in there.
You know? So I think I wonder if that has something to do with it too.
I'm sure all of I think it's one of those things where everything plays in at the exact right time and the exact right way to make him keep it together and make him, you know, it's just like all the things aligned at the right time for this to happen for him. And I think even something as simple as, you know, Dumbledore really letting him run with some of these things, like we talked about at the end of the last book, really Dumbledore really empowering him to take that that invisibility cloak and go, you know, fight Voldemort, you know, that has to have a significant impact too, because someone's trusting Harry for the first time and trusting him to control his own destiny and his own life. While maybe we later find out it's not so arguably controlled or not controlled, but he gets this sense of direction for the first time in his entire life, which I think most kids have had at some point. By then they've told their parents what they want to eat or decided what sport to play, you know, at 4 or 5. So I think all of these really weigh in on who Harry becomes, and just seeing the Dursleys' treatment of him over and over again, and it basically being driven home every single time we get introduced to a new book, is just, you want to forget about it as quickly as possible and move on because it's so horrible. And, you know, poor Harry can't ever do that. So,
right.
You know, it's just amazing. It's just a way to open that door to him every time you get the book. And
well, and then shockingly enough, you know, he goes to his room because that's where he's supposed to be that evening and about to collapse on his bed. But there's somebody else on it already. And that's where the chapter ends. And we're going to meet somebody that I really enjoy next chapter.
Yes. Then this character
never kill you, sir. Just maybe maim or severely injure.
This character probably has one of my favorite quotes of all of the books ever. Anywhere, all the books, all the movies. Like, he's got one of my favorite, like, moments of glory.
Is that in book of is that all in of book them. Seven?
No, it's the end of this
oh,
one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The start of the next one. Yeah. When he stands up.
Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
It is seven. Yeah, You're right. I think he says it multiple times, but I think the moment is in seven and it's against Bellatrix.
Oh, yes.
I think.
That is a fantastic moment. So,
yeah. But that
it's way beyond us at the moment.
I know. It's so far out there, but we all have to see. Now you have to keep listening to find out what it is.
Well, next week we are going to talk about Dobie's Warning, and it's been a blast talking about the worst birthday, and we surprised ourselves by how much we talked about this chapter and what we talked about. I hope you enjoyed it. And again, we'd love to hear from you. So make sure that you catch up with us in all the ways that we mentioned there at the beginning. And heck, go over to iTunes and help us with those star ratings and reviews. Drea, if anybody wants to use the internet for what it was built for, which I think is just to tell other people they're wrong, where can they find you?
You can come find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman. I actually really enjoyed, someone said, I think it was last week, that they totally would not ship Harry and Hermione. And I was like, yeah,
we wouldn't either.
Like, let's do it.
We wouldn't either.
We're with you. We wouldn't do that either.
You could find me on Twitter too at MattRushing02. I'm also on Instagram at MRushing. I am here on the Nerd Party Network with John Mills talking about Star Wars and aggressive negotiations. Join us. We love that show. It's so much fun. We really enjoy kind of digging into the minutiae of Star Wars, the fun of Star Wars, the series of Star Wars. It's great. So if you like what we do here with Harry Potter, that's kind of what we do there on Aggressive Negotiations, really digging into the subject matter. I'm also on the Trek FM network. I'm talking about Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb. And I'm also on our General Geek Show, the 602 Club. It's so much fun. We pretty much try to cover as many different fandoms and things as we possibly can. So I hope you'll check that out, whether it's Star Wars, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, Marvel, DC. I mean, the list goes on and on. You'll love it. And we also have Star Wars, a 602 Club collection, and that's just all the Star Wars episodes over there. So you can find all of that on Apple Podcasts. And we want to thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.